2-8. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. Continuing again in Luke chapter 9, verse 24. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. This is the word of God for the people of God.
I want to thank those who have helped us already in our worship. We have such capable and amazing, gifted laity, don't we? Thank you, Betty. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Randy. Can we just show them our gratitude this morning for all the gifts that they are giving to us? I have a quick children's message. If any children want to come up and join me to play the game of life, anybody, Jack? Mason, Carter, you want to come up for a little message? Join me here. Need your help with a little message this morning. Any other children? Got my boys. Awesome. All right, so why don't y'all have a seat right here on this little area here, right behind this game. Have any of you three played the game of life before? You played, Carter? So do you want to tell me how it works? What generally do you do? Can you tell me an idea of how it goes?
Well, first you gotta set it up.
You do what?
You first gotta set it up.
You gotta set it up. How would you set it up?
You
gotta get your people
you
out.
Look at the pieces and look on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
You see a letter and you find that letter on the board.
That's right. Do you spin this thing? Y'all want to practice spinning? Spin it. Just spin it one time. It sounds really cool to spin it. Just give me a spin. Uh-huh. And you spin it along. And as you spin, you get to land on a spot. So let's say you land on the career path spot. There's a card that tells you what kind of career you're going to have. You pick up the card. What is that career?
Police officer.
Police officer. How would you like to be a police officer in life? What do you think of that? Maybe not, maybe okay. Yeah, it's a pretty awesome thing. If you land on the college path, it tells you you're gonna go to college and what you're gonna study. What are you gonna study?
Science.
Science. Would you like to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It says your salary is about $100,000 if you decide to be a scientist. So that might be okay. If you land on this one, you get a bonus, Mason. And you get to take to spin again, and you get to describe how it is you would use your career skills as a scientist. So that would be awesome, too. And sometimes you get, what's that?
A dollar.
This dollar is $10,000. There's a whole $10,000 here. Let's see. How about if you have your, would any of y'all like to be able to drive one day?
Please.
You don't want to drive a pink car?
No, not pink.
Not pink? What color car would you rather drive?
Blue. I'd rather drive a yellow.
You want a yellow?
I want a blue.
You want blue? Okay. Do you have a favorite, Jack?
Yeah.
Pink?
Green.
Green? Okay, you'll take green. I'll take the pink car. I like that one. Okay. And then as you go along, you get other people to ride in your car. So there's you, and there's maybe a spouse riding with you. And then you get these people. These
I'm are. Men. I'm
You're a man, so you're going to be a blue one, right? Let's say you have a little baby girl. What color would she be?
Blue.
I love the way you think, Mason. We are not doing social norms around here. We'll give you a blue little girl.
No, I'm blue.
You're blue. Okay. Your little girl, can she be pink?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll put her in your car.
No, that's not my car.
That's not your car. I'm
this
sorry.
Is. This one's your car. Okay, I'm sorry.
We'll give you a pink.
What are you going to name your little girl, Mason?
Beth.
Beth?
Butt.
Butt? All right.
I guess she's driving one of those cars from London because, you know, Luke only cars have it.
Yes. So we're driving along, we stop and we get married, we drive along and we have twins. Uh-oh.
Or you get a house.
Or you get a house. There's a house here. What kind of house is this? It tells you on this card what kind of house it is.
A cozy cottage.
A cozy little cottage for only $150,000. So we hope you get some money to pay for that, right? Because this is, if these are 10 each, you're going to need 150 of these to cover that house, or at least a really, really good banker, right? So we're playing the game of life. Let me ask you, as you notice this game, do you see any cards here that have God on them?
God?
Yeah. Either a picture of Jesus or God or the word G-O-D. Do you see anything on there? You only see money.
Mm.
And cars.
Me too.
And houses.
Yep, yep,
and a spinning
yep,
wheel.
Yep, yep, yep,
yep, yep. So when we go through life, we can choose to go through life without God. But that would let's not. Yeah, we ought not do that. Because what does God give us in life? God gives us life. Yes, that's pretty awesome. What else does God do for us? Do you think God is the one who, it doesn't really work like this where you get, you know, you have to take a path based on what you spin. God actually provides the shape of your life. God decides even before you know it what your career is going to be. And God decides who your partner is going to be. God decides if you're going to have children. God decides whether you're going to have certain gifts that make you a scientist or a musician or an artist or whatever it is you want to grow up to be. And so we need God in our lives. So today as I do my message, I want you to think about this game of life, and I want you to think about God being in every single card and God being in every single square. Can you all do that for me? I bet you can try. Thank you. All right, let's go back to our seats. Thank you guys for helping me out. What color is your car, Mason?
Blue.
All right. You did not want me to put that kid in the wrong car. No. All right. Would you pray with me? Holy Spirit, guide us as we come to your word. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and redeemer. Amen. This morning, we are in the sixth week of our series, which is Didn't See It Coming. This is a book by Carrie Newhoff with the themes that we've had. This is actually the last week of this book. Some of you have been reading along, and I appreciate that. I think you've been enjoying the book itself. It's a really, really great book. And so today, we are on the sixth week, the thing that a lot of us will experience, if not all of us will experience, but we don't see coming, is emptiness. I really love this emoji. He looks like a pretty empty guy. So that's what we're talking about today. We've already heard the scripture Neil read from the writer of the book of Ecclesiastes. He has not given a name in the book, but he has given a title. And the title of the writer is Koheleth, which is the Hebrew word for teacher. We often think that Solomon is the teacher in this particular passage. And so as we've heard Koheleth talked about, he was sucking the marrow out of life, he was playing the game of life, and what he found out with all the things and with all the pleasures and with all the people, that it wasn't enough. He's pretty cynical. And so Koheleth wants to know, what am I working for? What am I living for? What do I gain with all the things I do, as he calls it, under the sun? And so here's what he found disappointing in his life. If you read the book of Ecclesiastes, you get to several things. He gained things and people. Back in the days when they did have slaves, they would buy slaves, and he had lots of slaves born in his house. He had herds and flocks. He had more than anyone in Jerusalem. He had silver, he had gold, he had treasures that kings and provinces had given him. He acquired male and female singers. That's pretty awesome. And he had a harem, many, 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 many wives. I believe like 700 wives. That's a lot of cars filled with a lot of children. And yet he decides that it is meaningless. Meaningless. Anybody here remember the old MasterCard commercial where the guy goes to a ball game with his son and they share a hot dog, and they say the hot dog costs $2, the drink costs $2, and the time with the father and son is what? Do you remember? Priceless. Well, so here is one for you. I need somebody to do some math. Who are the mathematicians in the room? So you can do the math for me. I have one of these, a modern-day parable of a MasterCard commercial for you. This is for a prom season. I don't know if we have any parents among us who have sent their kids. Yeah, she went to the prom, didn't she? You know all about this. So maybe you can help us with the math this morning. Gorgeous dress from Nordstrom, $250. Rented tuxedo, $150. Stretch limousine for $250 an hour, 4 hour minimum. A perfect night at the prom, priceless. But there's more. $50 for flowers, $50 for jewelry, $50 for manicure, another $25 for a pedicure, $50 for the tanning salon, $50 for the hairdo, $50 for the pre-prom dinner times two for each person, $50 for the post-prom party, and $50 for the actual tickets to the dance. Anybody doing the math for me? What is it, Holly?
$1,925.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you, guys, for doing the math. All right, that's what you have to look forward to if you have elementary and middle school parents. Let me tell you, save up now. When I was warned about this, and I used to put $50 a month into my children's account to save up for their prom night. It is the night of nights, and even my dad, who was the cheapest man in the world, would not want to not have his kid have an amazing prom. Well, let me ask you, with all that hoopla, does anybody besides me here remember having a disappointing prom night? Yep, y'all remember that. For all the money that it cost, it really wasn't priceless, although I will say the things I learned and the lessons I learned as a result of it were priceless, right? In a way, the prom night is a dress rehearsal for a lot of life. The world tells us to work and work and work and work and gain and gain and gain. And come the day we get to be 70 or 80 years old, we might think in retrospect, as the writer of Ecclesiastes says, he calls it a chasing after wind and nothing gained under the sun. Say, chasing after wind, nothing gained under the sun. This is a mantra we're going to learn. So after he got all his stuff, he went after pleasure. He said, come on, let me have pleasure. Laughter is what I went after. And then what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering for myself. I tried embracing folly. I denied nothing that I wanted. I refused my heart no pleasure, yet everything was meaningless. It was a chasing after the wind, and nothing was gained under the sun. Sad guy. Hedonism, that's what we call pleasure. That was his motive in life, amusement, fun. But by the end, it was meaningless. So after that, he says, well, what can I do? I've gone after things. I've had pleasure. I tell you what, I will be great. I'll make Israel great again, if you will. And so Solomon racks up accomplishments. He undertook great projects. He built vineyards, and he had houses and gardens and parks and all kinds of fruit trees. He had water from a reservoir, pretty big deal in the middle of a desert, so that his trees could flourish. But he received, after looking at all his hands and toil had done, he called it, remember what it was? A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. We've got a little refrain going here. So after that, let's see, I'll gain some knowledge, he says. And so Solomon gained knowledge. He applied his mind to things, wisdom. He says, I'm going to increase in wisdom more than anyone who has ever ruled in Jerusalem before me or after. And I have wisdom and I have knowledge. And then after that, though, he discovered it was madness. That, too, was a chasing after the wind. And with knowledge comes much sorrow. There's a reason why they say ignorance is bliss. And nothing was gained under the sun. This past week, Bob and I went to annual conference. And when we came back from annual conference yesterday, you know, wasn't it a beautiful weekend? I mean, we had beautiful weather this weekend. So Bob and I love to grill outside on our pergola. So we opened up the grill. We got the chicken ready, and he lit it up. And then we have this patio table with chairs, and we have it under a cover. So we go to take the cover off of the patio table, and what we discovered was the table wasn't there. Well, actually, the frame of the table was there. It was a glass table, you see, and somehow something hit it, and all of the cover, the table, the glass on it, was smashed to smithereens all over the patio. Now, we then went, wonder why, how that happened. You know, why would they just do that? And maybe it was the yard guy, and they hit something, and it smashed it. I think it was a coup between the birds and the squirrels and the chipmunks. Because we were not there to feed them. They say, no food for you when you get back, or something of that nature. But that was where we were going to enjoy our meal. It was right there on that table. We had to clean it all up. And that glass table that used to take up all of that space, after being smashed to smithereens, fit into a box about this big, swept it up, and all we had left was a metal frame. It occurs to me that a lot of life is like that empty hole in the frame of that table. In his book, Newhoff describes emptiness as the result of this thing he calls, can you say WIFM? WIFM. Do you know what that means? Do you know what this acronym is for? That's it. What's in it for me? It's pronounced WIFM. This is a marketing strategy for those of you who are in marketing. You know that if a product is going to sell, you have to help the consumer know what's in it for me. And so Newhoff talks about this consumer world, and he says that there's a danger of how this world can affect everything, how we can see WIFM, what's in it for me, in all the aspects of our lives. So here we go. He says, the WIFM formula has so permeated our culture that you take the mentality into everything you do. Think about marriage. The secret question we all ask in a relationship about our spouse is, what's in it for me? This question can even infect your parenting, which is why you're not just upset at your kids when they mess up, but you're also upset at how it reflects on you in front of your family and your friends. Your kids aren't delivering that constant stream of constant joy you had hoped they would bring you. And if they are, then it makes you feel great in front of your family and friends, which lands you right back into another thing we talked about, which was pride. He says there's no end to the sad discontent of making you the mission of your life. No job has quite delivered what you hoped for. Maybe it did for a while, but not for long. Even your friendships can get old fast. Well, what have they done for you lately? If WIFM becomes your spiritual filter, watch out. No church will be good enough. No group will be good enough. And God will seem only as good as he's been to you lately. Isn't that an interesting perspective? What's in it for me? So over the past few weeks, we've been talking about these games. Jenga, we had all those blocks we pulled out for the pride in our life, how pride goes before the fall. And last week, we talked about burnout with those chutes that we go down after we've climbed the ladder of life. Well, today, it's the game of life. And pretty much, it's what the writer of Ecclesiastes talks about. To everything, turn, turn, turn. Y'all remember that old song from Ecclesiastes 3? There's a season for everything, a season for this, a season for that, a season to everything. Just turn. Life just
turns. So today I'd like to show you a clip from one of my favorite Pixar movies. It's about the life of two characters named Ellie and Carl and their life together. It's one of the opening scenes of the movie Up. And so as you look at this, day in, day out, year in, year out, decade in, decade out, look at how it ends, especially when you consider the one thing that is right beyond their reach. Let's take a look.
Thank you.
love this montage of life, and I even think it's phenomenal on the days that we are married to the person of our dreams, that we even acknowledge that one of us is going to die before the other. We will love until we are parted by death. You know, Bob and I will go back to Tangier every summer. And when we go back, we always take a good look and tend to his parents' graves. His mom died many years ago. She was an amazing Christian. And his dad died just a very short while after. And this year, when we go back, the house that Bob grew up in will not be there. It's been torn down. Several years ago, he and his brother went back to the island, and they cleaned out the house. And if you go to Tangier Island, it takes a lot to get there and a lot to get back on a boat. So he only brought a duffel bag to bring only the things that he thought were most important. And what he brought back, he opened it up, and it was a few pictures and love letters between Bill and Joanne, his mom and dad, from when they were, the summer before they were married. Joanne was only 16 years old at the time. And she had been sick several days before while he was away. And he said, "Joanne, I hope you get better soon. I can't stand to think of you sick and hurting. Get well. God, Joanne, I couldn't live if something were to happen to you." 40 years later, these words foreshadowed exactly what happened to Bill. He really couldn't live without Joanne. We all believe that he died right away because he died of a broken heart. So even with relationships, once again, the wheel keeps turning, and we have to find out what the meaning is. What is the meaning? What are the plans for our lives? If somebody were to ask you, "I want to do this, and then I want to do this, and I want to do this, and I want to do this." A wise preacher once asked a young person who went through all of those things and then finally said he wants to make enough money to retire early and to travel. And then the wise preacher turned to him and said, "Well, what comes after that?" And the young man was kind of annoyed by answering these questions. And so the preacher then says, "Let me tell you, young man, your plans are only for the next 60 or 70 years. You must make plans big enough to include God and large enough to include eternity." Jesus would say it like this: "Whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it." In his book, Newhoff talks about the antidote to emptiness. And the antidote to emptiness is simply find a mission that is bigger than you. You see, if we can live for ourselves, we can also die for ourselves. And we can have a mission that is so much bigger than who we are. You know, each week we've had these games, and at the end of the day, I'll put the game away. I'll take all the playing pieces and the little cars that we filled up with people and the cards, and I'll fold it back up. And where do I put it? Put it back in the box. Terry Newhoff, in his book about putting things back in the box, talks about this, the game of life and the things we put back in the box. But it's not this kind of box he's talking about. The box he's talking about in his book is that other box, that other box that you and I will all end up in one day, that casket. If not a casket, some kind of container. It can be wood, it can be metal, mahogany, cherry, any number of components. That in the end, this is what happens. I get the unique privilege as a pastor to stand by these boxes. And when I do, I often am required to say a eulogy. I want to let you know that I don't write the eulogy. I listen for the eulogy. I look for the eulogy. I share the eulogy. You and I write our own eulogies. And the eulogies that we write are the mission that is bigger than us. Last week, Walter Hawthorne talked about legacy. and the importance of leaving a legacy, not only as a church, but for the world, something that long after you and I are gone will allow Mason and Jack and their children, Carter's kids, to be able to have a place to be. I tell you, that's even more priceless than that night at the prom. What we're talking about is putting God and eternity at the center of our mission. And so that's a question I have for you today. How are you doing that? Maybe you're doing it this week by sharing a story with children at Vacation Bible School. Long after I'm gone, I sure hope that one day somebody says, you know, I remember once having a preacher, that old lady with long hair and who dressed funny. She taught me about Moses and a basket and something about water and how God led him there. I hope that gets said, something like that. What do you hope gets said? What is your mission? And in the end, have you made Christ your center? If we see life as that table, like in the back of our patio, there's that hole now in that table. And I could fill it with money, I could fill it with people, I could fill it with experiences, I can fill it with pleasure, and I have a lot of that. God has been good to me. I could fill it with amazing relationships, and I have those. But what really makes it a table is that Christ has made it a banquet. As Psalm 23 says, that God places the table before us. We feast at that banquet. What is your place with Jesus at the center of your life?